Welcome back to our teaching. Today, I'm going to move forward in the New Testament to the book of John. John chapter 8, I'll read verses 10 and 11. And verse 10 tells us that when Jesus had lifted up himself and saw none but the woman, he said unto her, "Woman, where are thine accusers? Hath no man condemned thee?" She says, "No man, Lord." And Jesus said unto her, "Neither do I condemn thee. Go and sin no more." What a story. This is a story of shame and degradation. Before I go into this anymore, I want to relate to you a story I read about Rebecca Thompson. When she was 18 years old, her and her 11-year-old sister was abducted by a pair of hoodlums in Casper, Wyoming. The hoodlums drove the girls 40 miles southwest to the Fremont Canyon Bridge, a one-lane steel beam structure rising 110 feet above the North Platte River. The men brutally beat and raped Rebecca. She somehow convinced them not to do the same thing to her sister. Both were thrown over the bridge into a narrow gorge. Her sister Amy died when she landed on a rock near the river, but Rebecca slammed into a ledge and was ricocheted into deep water. With a hip fractured in 5 places, she struggled to shore and waited for the dawn. But the dawn never came for Rebecca. Oh, the sun came out. She was found. The doctors treated her wounds. The court imprisoned her attackers. Life continued. But the dawn never came for Rebecca. 19 years later, she returned to that bridge and jumped off. Why did she do this? What happened to her world? Was it fear? Perhaps. Was it anger? Could have been. Was it guilt? Some think so. Was it shame? Everyone had heard of the humiliating details of her tragedy. The stigma was tattooed even deeper with the newspaper ink of every headline. She had been raped. She had been violated. She had been shamed. And try as she might, she could never outrun the memory. Canyons of shame runs deep. They draw you back to the bridge of sorrows to be shamed again and again and again. Sometimes your shame is private. Other times it's public. Whether public or private, shame is always painful. And unless you deal with it, unless you get help, the dawn will never come for you. I would say that there are probably some Rebeccas in every city and a Fremont Bridge in every town. But there is one woman whom story embodies them all. A story of failure. A story of abuse. A story of shame. A story of grace. It's the story in the 8th chapter of John. I read to you verses 10 and 11. Most everybody I know that story by heart. She had been caught in adultery, plain and simple. No way out. Caught in the act. In an instant, she is yanked from private passion to public spectacle. Clutching a thin rope around her shoulders, she hid her nakedness, but nothing could hide her shame. From this day on, she would be known as an adulteress. When she would go to the market, women would whisper. When she passed by, heads would turn. And when her name was mentioned, people remember. Moral failure finds easy recall. The evidence leaves little doubt. She had been caught, but she would soon find out that she was not the catch. She was only the bait. She was immaterial. She was merely a pawn in their game. Her future, it's unimportant. Her reputation, who cares if it's ruined? She is a necessary yet dispensable part of their plan. She is only the collateral damage in their plan to trick him. So they bring her before the Lord, and they quote scripture to him, and they say, "Now Moses in the law commanded us that such should be stoned. But what sayest thou?" The Bible tells us that this they said, tempting him, that they might have to accuse him. So Jesus stooped down and began to write on the ground. The woman stared at the ground, her sweaty, dangled hair, her tears hot with hurt. Her lips are tight. Her jaw is clenched. She knows that she's been framed. She looks at the stone in their hands. She thinks of running, but where? To whom? She could beg for mercy, but these men would offer none. The woman had nowhere to turn. You'd expect Jesus to stand and proclaim judgment on these hypocrites, but he doesn't. Once again, his move is subtle. His message is unmistakable. What does Jesus do? I know that you already know, but pretend that you don't, so you can feel that surprise. Jesus writes on the ground, the same finger that engraved the commandments on the mountain peaks, the same fingers that wrote the warning on Belshazzar's wall, now scribbles in the courtyard. And as he writes, he speaks. Anyone here who has never sinned can throw the first stone. They drop their stones, and as they turn to leave, the only sound is the thud of the rocks and the shuffle of their feet. The jury is gone now. The courtroom becomes the judge's chamber, and the woman awaits his verdict. Surely, a sermon is brewing. No doubt he's going to demand that I apologize. But the judge doesn't speak. He actually seems surprised when he realizes that she is still there. And he said unto her, "Woman, where are your accusers? Hath no man condemned thee?" She said, "No man, Lord." And Jesus said, "Neither do I condemn thee. Go and sin no more." If you've ever wondered how God reacts when you fail, frame these words, hang them on the wall, read them, ponder them, let them wash over your soul, or better still, take him with you to your canyon of shame. Invite Christ to journey with you back to the Fremont Bridge of your world. Let him stand beside you as you retell the events of the darkest night of your soul. And then listen. Listen carefully. He's speaking. "Neither do I condemn thee. Go and sin no more." His message has two words. Not guilty.
I know actions speak much louder than any words can say. It's easy to express your love, then turn and walk away. But when Jesus said, I love you, to a world that was lost, he had his say with love displayed from an old